me. I'm sorry, my French is not very good, so if you'll bear with me, I'll try to speak in English very slowly so you can understand me. So I am a psychologist. I work with children aged 3 to 5 years. That's my specialty. And so what I'll be sharing with you today is some work that my colleagues and I have been doing with preschoolers, so 3 to 5 year olds, and how they understand and conceptualize God, as well as other agents they can't see. So my talk is, Are Children Natural Believers? Just to start off, this is a quote by Richard Dawkins, and he is a believer that children actually don't have, they aren't born believers. And so this is just a quote from him. I'll read it in English, but you can follow along in French. There are opinions about the cosmos and the world that children, once grown, will presumably be in a position to evaluate for themselves. Religion is the one field in our culture about which it is absolutely accepted, without question, without even noticing how bizarre it is that parents have a total and absolute say in what their children are going to be, how their children are going to be raised, what opinions their children are going to have about the cosmos, about life, about existence. Do you see what I mean by mental child abuse? And here's another quote from 2006. Children blindly accept from authorities propositions about the world, about the cosmos, about morality, and about human nature. So, in essence, what Dawkins is talking about is the indoctrination hypothesis. So what he believes is that children learn about these ideas from their parents and take it in. But actually, from what cognitive science is showing, is that kids actually come to these ideas very naturally, and they believe in these ideas naturally. And what's unnatural is for people to be telling them that these ideas don't exist, but they should be believing these ideas. So I'll share with you some of what we've been finding and why we think this. Sorry, I've got two different PowerPoints going on at the same time. So I want to start with just some history. So Jean Piaget, he's the father of child development. He was a Swiss psychologist, and one of the first people to look at a variety of different things within children. And he was one of the first to recognize that children have these religious concepts very early. This is a quote from Piaget at the top. God is naturally regarded as like a man. And so what he was saying with children is that they seem to see God is just another father figure. And he also thought that children actually couldn't understand God until they were at least 7, so they could understand more complex ideas. But since that time, there's been a ton of studies, including some of the ones that I will show you, that kids actually, by 2 or 3, can actually have a pretty complex idea about who God is. So Piaget was definitely the starter of this field, but I think especially in the last few years, we've shown that Piaget is incorrect and that kids very young can understand ideas about God. So how do we develop these religious ideas and keep talking about this? So what I'm going to be showing you in the next 3 slides are some cognitive mechanisms that allow us to think about God and other agents that we cannot see. These aren't actually areas of the brain. These are cognitive mechanisms that we find in the mind. So I'll be talking about theory of mind, also the hypersensitive agency detection device, which is also known as HAD, the minimal counterintuitive ideas, we'll be talking about those, and lastly, what we call promiscuous teleology. So I'll start off, so the person in this field that kind of has started off these ideas, his name is Justin Barrett, he's a Christian. He was my supervisor in Oxford. He's now at Fuller Seminary in Southern California. He's written 2 books, Why Would I Never Believe in God and Born Believers. I highly recommend those books if you want to know more about the field of this research. So what he suggests is that there's evidence that children have a remarkable tendency to believe in God. So by the age of 3, children can actually think of God differently from humans, so it's not like Piaget. Kids don't actually think of God as a father figure. He's actually something very different. So he suggests that kids are born believers. There's another scientist named Deb Kalaman. She's at Boston University. And she's written several papers and done several studies about how intuitive children are. In her brief background, she calls them intuitive theists. And I'll be talking about some of her studies as well. So one of the ideas that we make the assumption is, a lot of people think that babies come into the world and they don't know anything, that they're blank slates. But actually, babies know a lot more than we think when they come in the world. And they have some basic cognitive mechanisms that help them learn about different aspects of the world. And one of them is physics. So there's these amazing studies with babies where they look at, so obviously babies can't speak, so how do we understand what they know? There's these looking time measures. So they'll sit a baby in front of a computer or in front of a task, and if they're surprised, they look longer at something, so they measure the time they spend looking at an object. If they're not surprised, they're kind of bored, that's an indication that they've seen it before. So to look at the domain of physics, so how they actually understand how gravity works, or contact works, they actually look looking time measures. So for example, there was a researcher named Bayerjan who was interested in how children understand gravity. So she had these different screens where she would, a ball would drop, and it would hit the ground, and a baby would watch. And then she'd have another screen where a ball would drop and suspend right in the middle, and babies would look longer at this, because they would expect, just like we all would, that the ball should drop to the ground. So that was an indication that babies have some kind of intuitive sense of how physics work. And they've done all sorts of types of physical experiments to see how babies understand these things, and we seem to. And they also understand number amazingly. So when you see displays of a stage where there's two puppets kind of popped up, the curtain goes down, you see two puppets magazine on the side, and the curtain raises, and actually then forms to the left, babies look longer at that because they expect if two have left, there should be nothing behind the screen. So they seem to be able to hold things in a constant kind of space. Another one is theory of mind, which we'll get to in a second. Last one is biology. So even very young kids know that cats will have kittens, dogs will have dogs, and dogs don't give birth to snails, dogs don't give birth to fish. They seem to have some kind of sense of the order of things. So that seems to be very intuitive to them too. So let me talk about theory of mind. So theory of mind is the ability to attribute mental states, such as intuitions, feelings, emotions, beliefs, knowledge, or desires to other people. So what is theory of mind? We've just been talking about that. So how do we test this with a child? What we do is we give them some kind of box that they're familiar with. So American kids are very familiar with what this box is, the box of crackers. And we usually give it to the child and say, what do you think is inside this box? And they'll say, oh, there's crackers inside the box. And the experimenter opens up the box and actually shows that there's something surprising inside. So let's just say it's rocks. So you show the child that it's rocks inside the box, close it back up and say, okay, what's inside this box? And they'll say, oh, there's rocks inside the box. Great. So how you test this is you get someone who hasn't seen this demonstration, and you tell them, okay, let's pretend your mom just walked in the room, and we're going to show her this box. What do you think she would say is inside the box? And a three-year-old who doesn't have theory of mind yet usually will say, mom knows the rocks inside the box. But a five-year-old, so theory of mind is developed somewhere between 3 years and 5 years of age. A five-year-old would say, well, mom wasn't in here when you showed me this box, so she's probably fooled and thinks there's crackers inside the box. But both ages, when you ask them, okay, what do you think God would think is inside the box? A three-year-old would say, God knows what there's rocks inside the box. And a five-year-old would say the same thing. So some of these studies we've been doing is looking at how children understand other ages who are around. So it seems like from 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, kids seem to understand God's different, God knows what rocks inside the box. So how we know that kids pass this test, if a kid says that there's rocks inside the box, they pass the test. If they says that mom says there's crackers, they don't pass if they say that mom has rocks inside the box. They do pass if they think mom said that there's crackers inside the box. So I'm going to show you a little video about what this looks like. So this will be a three-year-old, and you'll see but she doesn't have hearing.
Do you know what this is?
Crayon.
Crayon. If I opened the box, what would be inside?
Crayon.
Good. Let's open the box and see what's inside. What's inside?
M&M's.
M&M's. What's really inside the box?
M&M's.
M&M's? Before I opened it, what did you think was inside the box? That's right. I'm going to close the box now. Now, Jenna is outside. If Jenna comes back in the room, what will she say is inside the box?
M&M's.
Great. That little girl was fooled and she thought that her friend was in the inside of the box. So another common mechanism is the minimal counterintuitiveness theory. And what we mean is this, that so God is a minimal counterintuitive concept. And what we mean by that is there's certain intuitions that we have about the world. So those common mechanisms that I was talking about, how babies can understand physics, how babies can understand biology, and as children by the age of 5 can understand certain ideas about how psychology works. Those are basic intuitions that we have about the world. So a cat has kittens, it doesn't have snails. If a cat did have snails, that would be minimally counterintuitive. So that would go counter to what we think a cat should have. And these ideas are interesting. So a cat that gives birth to snails, I think we all would start talking about that at lunch. It's a weird idea, something that probably wouldn't happen. So minimal counterintuitive ideas are worth talking about. They're interesting. They go counter to what we think. So here's a few examples of what I mean by some minimal counterintuitiveness concepts. This is a toaster that can talk. So toasters can't really talk. So the thing that goes counter to our intuitions is that this inanimate object can talk and has animacy and agency. Elves supposedly are immortal. So most of us, I think, will die someday, and so elves, for some reason, don't. I love stories. So this would be something that will counter to our expectations. And a ghost, what's different there is that they can go through walls. So most of us, if we went against a wall, we would definitely probably smack our heads, whereas a ghost wouldn't. So that would be the thing that goes counter to our expectations. So that's another thing that's interesting. So a lot of cognitive scientists use this idea as an explanation for why religion is so interesting to other people. A lot of people in my field are atheists, and they use this concept as a reason for why they study religion. They still find it captivating and really interesting and worth talking about. So a lot of ideas in religion are interesting, they're captivating. The next one is HAS, so again, it's the Hypersensitive Agency Detection Device. And before I explain it, I have another video for you. And I want you just to pay attention to it, and if there's someone that's comfortable in English afterwards, just to tell me what you think you saw in the film, that would be great. But I'll just show you the film.
Thank you.
then most of you probably, with the laughter that I was hearing, probably assumed that these were agents. So maybe there was a bully in the screen. Maybe there was two partners that were friends that were trying to run away from somebody. So it's very easy for our minds to attribute agency. These are just objects. It's two triangles, a circle, and a box that they were apparently going in and out of and breaking at certain points. So you immediately attribute feelings, desires, intuitions about these objects. So that's what HAT is. So it's this instinct that we have to attribute agency to other things. And so a lot of cognitive scientists believe that a lot of certain folk traditions, a lot of aspects of religion have come about because we have this gut reaction to agents, and we attribute agency to things that aren't really there. There's a classic example that people give that when you hear a bump in the night, you immediately assume it's been a cat, or it's a burglar, or someone upstairs. And when you find that nothing exists upstairs, you immediately think, well, it must have been something. Maybe it's a ghost or something else. So we attribute agency, perhaps, when none is necessarily needed. So that is HAD. Here's some other examples. So if anyone sees anything in this picture, you're attributing HAD. But maybe not so much in this picture. So the top picture, probably two eyes and a nose. You immediately see a face. The other one, you don't. Other examples, probably where we would attribute certain agents. So it's in a world everywhere. The next one is one of my favorite cognitive mechanisms, just because of the title, Promiscuous Teleology. It's a fun word to say. It sounds provocative. And basically, what this means is children have the propensity to find design and function in the world in which they live. And how people have tested this is they ask children questions just like this. So why do you think the rocks are so pointy? And kids give responses like this. They say they were pointy so the animals wouldn't sit on them and smash them. Instead of probably obvious choice, they were pointy because bits of stuff piled up on top of one another for a long time. Here's some other examples. Why did the first ever bird exist? To make nice music, because it made the world look nice. Why did the first monkey exist? Then we had somebody to plant trees. So there can be an animal in the jungle. Here's some more. Why did the first mountain exist? They made mountains so people can look at them. Who is they? They're attributing agency again. Why did the first river exist? So boats could come in the water so that people could do fishing. So these questions are also related to intelligent design. So they're putting purpose where there's none. They're also putting design where there's none. So with these same questions, an experimenter, so this is Deb Kalman, she asked a further question. So she says, we've been talking about mountains, rivers, monkeys, and birds, so all those questions that I was just showing you. Now here's the next question. Did someone or something make the first ever mountain exist? Or did it just happen? So basically what the responses were, under half of the children said someone made these natural events. Over half said someone made natural objects. And 73% said someone made animals. So that's interesting. So they're obviously attributing purpose and design to all of these things in the natural world. So of course, the natural question next is, well, if you're talking about someone, who are you talking about? So who made these artifacts? Who made these natural objects? And who made these animals? They give them three options. Was it made by people? Was it made by God? Or does no one know? And amazingly, children were 7 times more likely to say that God made these natural objects. And these were children from a variety of homes, from religious backgrounds, but non-religious backgrounds. So children already very young, these are children between 4 and 7, are saying that God made these things. So here's another study. This is by an experimenter at the University of Michigan. And she was interested in these questions about design and evolution. So she decided to ask children specifically from Christian homes and also sample children from atheist homes where they actively teach evolution to the kids. I'm not saying that the children in the Christian homes weren't teaching evolution as well, but definitely from the atheist homes, they weren't getting kind of a creationist story. She wanted to see what kids Mary Ann would say. So she asked them about things that they probably wouldn't heard of, like the origin of the sun bear, and this lizard called the tuatara, and then a human being, which of course they've heard about. So she wanted to know where these things were coming from. And amazingly, kids, no matter what home they were brought in, whether it's from an atheist home or a Christian home, they offered more creationist accounts. So they said that God made these things. And they offered it more than just spontaneously, saying, oh, well, it just happened. So hardly anybody, the kids, just say, well, it just happened. And this was even in the case where kids didn't matter what home they were brought in. And it didn't seem to be until they were 10 years old that children started to distinguish. So kids from atheist homes up until they were 10 had more of a creationist understanding of how God created the world. So a lot of the criticism when people saw this research, well, kids just seem to be really gullible. Are they just believing whatever they hear? Can they actually distinguish between fantastical beings and real beings? You know, what is the issue here? So a man named Paul Harris, who is at Oxford and is now at Harvard, was really interested in this idea. So he gave them a variety of tests. This is just an example of one of them. And he found that supernatural agents actually seem to have a special status. So kids actually can differentiate between different things. And so he asked 5 and 6-year-olds about a variety of different types of agents you might see, or entities. So the first group were things like mermaids and ghosts. So these were stories that kids have heard about, but in these stories, they're probably not hearing that anyone actually believes in mermaids and ghosts and these kind of things. A second group was God and the Tooth Fairy. So these are actually agents that we talk about in our everyday lives that you hear people say, you believe in the Tooth Fairy, you believe in God. And a lot more scientific entities that they couldn't see. So things like germs or oxygen. So things that are actually out there, but you cannot see. So they wanted to see how much kids believe in these things. And here's just a little graph that shows. So kids, so these are 5 and 6-year-olds, can distinguish. They don't believe in the mermaids, but they do believe in God and germs. So they, young children actually are distinguishing between all these different types of agents. So what do they do when they're actually put in a situation where there is a supernatural agent? How do kids react? And so this was a beautiful design that was created by a guy named Jesse Baring. He actually wanted to see, okay, it's fine if kids say if they believe it or not, but let's see if they actually act out on this. So he created what's called the Princess Alice, and this is called the Princess Alice Study. And what he did was he basically got children in a room and showed them there was a bullseye on the back of the room, and their task was to get as many Velcro balls attached to this bullseye as they could. But the catch was they had to do it, they had to stand with their back to the bullseye, and they had to throw it with their non-dominant hand. So if they were right-handed, they had to throw it with their left hand, just like this on the back of the wall. And there were 3 different groups. So in one group, they basically just put them in a room and watched them unsupervised. And in the second group, they had one of the experimenters sat in a chair that was in the room. So the experimenter could watch to see what they did. And last one, they had Princess Alice. So Princess Alice, they said, is sitting in this chair in this room. She's sitting there watching you. You know, you can do whatever you want, but Princess Alice is there. So basically what they were watching is to see how many of these kids cheated in each of these conditions. So one is unsupervised, one the experimenter's there, and one Princess Alice is there. So I've got another video of a boy who's in the Princess Alice condition, and I want you to see what he does when he's unsupervised and Princess Alice is watching.
Thank you.
seeing that video, at first he was kind of convinced that Princess Alice was there. And then he decided to test his theory and go see if she's actually sitting on a chair. So he touched the chair and he sat down on it and shrugged and said, she's not real. And then he started cheating. So I think he was convinced in the beginning, but then he quickly figured out, maybe she's not really here. But in this study, it was interesting. So kids who were unsupervised, practically every child cheated. And then in the ones where Princess Alice and the experimenter were sitting in the chair, kids were a lot less likely to cheat because they thought that they were being watched. So other topics that a lot of cognitive scientists have talked about, although I don't have time to get into here, but there's a lot on ritual, there's a lot on magic, there's a lot on how religious ideas spread. So if I talked about a talking toaster, there's studies that show it, and how much does that get spread around a group. There's topics on prayer, reincarnation, souls, minds, and bodies, and that relationship, as well as spirit possession. So there's a lot of research that's been going on the last probably 20 years or so. So it's a very rich area, and I definitely recommend a few books at the end if you're interested in any of these things. So just to conclude, so I've shown you four different cognitive mechanisms that basically provide our minds this incredible capacity to think about agents that aren't there, think about design in a different way. And as a Christian, I believe that these are cognitive mechanisms that God's given us to have the capacity to think about it and to have a basis for actually rich theological ideas about him. And just if I have time, I just want to briefly tell you one of the studies that I did for my PhD. These are a bunch of my collaborators when I did my PhD at Oxford. Justin Barrett is on the top left, who I mentioned before. So the broad focus of this work is to look at how these ideas spread and why these ideas stay. And I said I'm a developmentalist, so I was looking at this with kids. So how do these ideas originate? So at some point, kids have to start thinking about these ideas once they have this idea, how do they think about and conceptualize, especially ideas about God? So the research questions that I was interested in is how do children conceptualize and evaluate a variety of minds, not only God, but how do they understand their mom and dad? A lot of research shows that kids think that mom and dad can do everything, so at what point do children realize that mom and dad actually are limited, and perhaps the animals actually don't know everything, and these kind of things. So when do they be able to differ from their understanding of these cognitive abilities? So I was interested in their comparisons between ordinary and extraordinary agents. So I did this with a bunch of kids in a lot of different countries. So I lived in Israel for 3 months to ask Jewish children about their ideas about God, as well as with British children. And then we had a collaborator who was doing it in the Dominican Republic and Kenya. So I'll be showing you basically a huge cross-cultural sample we had of how kids think about God. So the first study that was looking at this was Justin Barrett and colleagues, and that cracker and rocks task that I mentioned previously when we were talking about theory of mind, they gave that task to children in the U.S. And this is what they found. So the yellow line is God. All the other agents, which include mother, God, bear, elephant, snake, and tree. So between 3 and 4, they're attributing all those agents being able to understand that there's rocks inside rocks. Between 4 and 5, when they're starting to understand that actually probably their mother, a bear, elephant, snake, and tree probably wouldn't understand that there's rocks inside the box, that's when they distinguish. Between 3, 4, 5, and 6, they're all attributing God with knowing that there's rocks inside the box. So this is what a typical graph looks like. So what I did, so the problem with that task is that it's very easy because the child knows what's inside the box. So there could be this bias at 3 to think, because they know they're going to attribute everyone else with knowing too. So to counter that, I gave them a box that they didn't know what was inside the box. We call this the ignorance task. So we show them a box, and we don't tell them what's inside. So because they don't know what's inside, how are they going to attribute knowledge to all the other agents? So let's see the video. So we showed them about mom and God, and then we made up two agents. So we want two agents, they have no idea who they are. How do they think about these kind of fantastical agents? So one named Bop, so it's just a made-up word. Bop, who's just a person, just like you and me. And then Sweck, who's a person who can see through things. And in Kenya, they also asked about a best friend, their dog, a sun god. So these were kind of folk elements that they have in their tradition. God and ancestors, and the Dominican Republic, they also asked about Santa and the angel. So this is what we found. There's lots of cultural variations. The graphs look very different. But what you can see in all the graphs besides the Dominican Republic is that kids from a very early age, so the lines look different. So if you look at Israel, Kenya, the United Kingdom, so God is the line that has, it's dark black with, and it's dotted. They're like, they're big blocks. So you can see that God, very early on, they're getting. So they understand that God would know that there's whatever's in the box, but the other ones wouldn't. So in Israel, Kenya, and the United Kingdom, these kids are very smart. At three, they're getting, the other agents wouldn't know. In the Dominican Republic, it takes a little bit of development for them to understand and differentiate between the agents. But that's fine. You see a lot of cultural variation in how children understand theory of mind. So what this tells us is that between cultures, there is some variation about how children come to understand these types of ideas. But for the most part, children very early on seem to be able to understand that God's very different from all of us. That's really cool. So Piaget thought at seven, only at seven and up, children can understand these ideas. But we're showing that kids really young actually can have a good understanding about who God is, which is pretty cool. So what we conclude is that children can distinguish among these types of agents very early. And this is just a task I'm doing now. We're looking at children's understanding of omnipotence, so how they understand power, both in their parents and with God. You know, it's still being done, just to let you know that's what we're doing. And just to end with a quote, this is by a researcher named Scott Atran. He does a variety of research. He's mostly known for his work on terrorism, but he also has some research on religion. And he says, supernatural agency is the most culturally recurrent, cognitively relevant, and evolutionarily compelling concept in religion. The concept of the supernatural is culturally derived from an innate cognitive schema. And those cognitive schemas are some of the ones that I mentioned earlier. So if you're interested, I've put up some books about a lot of different work on this topic. If you're interested, those are some helpful resources for you to read. Thank you. Merci.